Hey, hey, good day, everybody. It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. You are tuned in to episode 3 of Drones, Code, and People, brought to you by The Hive of Grand Forks and iSight Drone Services. Joining me today is Tommy Kenville. How are you?
I'm great.
And you have your first ever guest on the show with you today. He is Trevor Woods of Northern Plains UAS Test Site, the Executive Director. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yes, yes. Big show today about all the latest and greatest going on with you guys today. How's the week been? It's been a month since you guys been in, getting used to the swing of things?
Spring's always a better time of year. We can fly longer hours because of the daylight, so...
Absolutely. Yes. You got to love it, too. And especially this week, too, where now it's like, all right, we kind of had those teases with some nice early spring, early summer weather, the 50s, 60s. And then, nope, going to get more 20s and teens or even a couple sprinkles of sub-zero. But now it seems I think 70s is like a day or two away from here. We'll see. But, pinch hitting for John Roberts. He's on vacation. He'll be back next month with you guys here. But so excited to catch up on just so much more. But, Trevor, this is your first time on the show. Why don't we get to know you a little bit? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Outside of Northern Plains UAS test site, are you from the Grand Forks area?
Yeah, originally I was born and raised in the Twin Cities area, but came up here for college at the University of North Dakota. Had every intention on leaving, of course, and then, here I am, still here. So, yeah, I live in Grand Forks, actually not too far from here, and got my wife and kids here and been part of this test site program since the very beginning with Tommy. And I like to say I'm one of the few folks at the test site who was here before it even existed. It was just a concept and an idea. And
from the very beginning.
And started on the ground floor, helped develop the proposal for the state, and here we are today.
How did you and Tommy get to know each other then?
We met at the library.
Oh, yeah. Or the supermarket.
Well, actually, funny enough, I think his sister I ran across, and she was a professor of mine in the university system. And then Tommy's dad actually was living in a town in North Dakota where my wife's from. And so we just met through family and then by association of the Kenville last name and got to know folks. And then as this test site opportunity came about and the state was really pushing forward on it, you know, Tommy was one of the early leaders and still is one of the leaders of this industry moving things forward for Grand Forks. And so he helped play a role in the airspace leadership integration team, and I was there and helping from the operational side.
Gosh, hey, there you go. Wow. So, well, we got so much ground to cover today. Like, I know one of on top of the agenda for today, one of the big talking points, history of Vantis and the test site.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, I was already kind of getting into it right there. I think, Tommy, you probably have a better idea of the political side of what really drove the early initial parts of the state investing in this space. But I can say when I entered into it, it was at a point where there was already kind of a base of research occurring at the University of North Dakota. I myself was a pilot and still am a pilot, but at that point in time, there wasn't a lot of hiring going on at the airlines. And so here I was, kind of looking to do more work, and I knew how to fly a plane, and there was activity going on and they needed pilots. And so I just rose my hand and said, I'll do it. And that kind of just got me into it, quite simply. But I don't know if you want to elaborate on the political side.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a little bit pre-Trevor. when Senator Hovind was governor, this can only happen in North Dakota. He calls my cell phone. It says governor's office. I answer the phone. Tommy, this is John. I'm like, yeah. And he asked me about the drone industry, and he knew I used to sell for UND Aerospace my last career. I said, it's going to change the world like the internet. I just don't know when because of the FAA. And he said, well, if we went after it as a state, would you help us? I said, sure. Hour later, his Department of Commerce guy, Paul Lucy, calls me, and it was kind of like off. Some of it I'd covered before, but we were off to the races. And so we've had a couple. I think Trevor's the third test site director. All had their own little ways about them. Good and, I'd like to be flying more, but Trevor's working on that for me. Beyond visual line of sight, what we've talked about in other shows, that's the real winner for companies like mine. We can do other projects, but the real play is to go from here to Devil's Lake today.
Okay.
Something like that with cargo or with, you know, taking imagery and things like that. And so it's really been back in the day, Trevor knows, we called it One Voice, because whether you were a crop duster, UND Aerospace, or any other kind of aviation, we all wanted drones in a safe manner. And so Trevor's organization, we've worked closely with, but they've really helped us move down the line and get in the air and do things like that. So
absolutely. So much there, so much background on that there too. It's interesting that you brought that up. You know, kind of speaking of Vantis, I know we're kind of wondering about companies that have flown in the Vantis networks since day one.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, Vantis is still very much in a phase of it's still growing and maturing and everything, but it's a visionary concept that's unique for aviation. You know, what we're really doing with Vantis is something that would probably take the FAA, you know, 15, 20 years to do on their own. And, you know, just in the early phases of this, Governor Burgum really bought onto this idea and really wanted to champion it with my predecessor of the test site. And so was able to successfully, you know, put the funding in there for the budget to really get this up and running. And that happened in 2019. And so really we didn't effectively get in the air after deploying some infrastructure until, you know, late 2020, 2021. And I like to look at Vantis and compare it to roads. You know, where we're at today is drones are kind of like the cars, right? And your car is valuable, your truck is valuable when you can actually drive on a roadway. But if you don't have those roadways, it's going to be a lot more difficult to get to where you want to go. And that's kind of where we're at with the drone industry right now is Vantis is really that roadway system. And at this point, we've thrown down some roads. I would probably call them a little bit more gravel in nature. They're not, you know, fully connected to everything yet, and they're not as widespread. But, you know, this partnership with EyeSight is an example of we needed partners who were willing to drive their cars, quote unquote, in this case, fly a drone on these gravel roadways in the sky to really help us understand what is needed to build these roadways or this network, this transportation network, test it out, figure out where all the bugs are, what mistakes we're going to make. And that's really what we've been doing with the EyeSight team. And so, you know, there hasn't been a lot of activity on the Vantis network in that regard because it's still very early phase. But the groundwork we're laying and the framework we're laying is really scalable. So what we're really developing here is essentially a framework where other partners, aircraft manufacturers, technology providers will know, you know, this is what it's going to take in order to fly beyond visual line of sight. This is the kind of aircraft requirements you're going to need. This is the kind of technology you're going to need. This is the kind of training you're going to need. And so we're doing a lot of that development with the EyeSight team. Thales USA is actually our technology provider and our partner. They bring in a lot of expertise from worldwide aviation infrastructure. And so they've partnered with the state of North Dakota to really figure out what is this suite of technology and services needed to make this happen. And again, equating it back to the roadway, you know, you probably take this for granted, but you can jump in your car and just go where you need to go. But we're still having to figure out how do you license the vehicles? How do you register them? How do you, you know, ensure people are qualified and have what they need on it? So from a pure numbers perspective, we're not there yet, but it is laying the foundation to get there in the very near future.
I love that analogy you use, like creating the custom roadway, but for the skies, for drone. Exactly. So it's a whole, when you think about going back to cars, and you know, cars came out, what, very early 1900s. You know, it wasn't like they had the interstate or highway system. Right. It took years and decades to get there. And so just like how it took many years and decades to get there, maybe not as long for drones. We'll see with the rate of technology, the way things are going nowadays. But I just think that's great how you guys are just collaborating and working together.
We're one of many of Trevor's partners. I think we've probably over the years flown the most, but the Montana company, Virginia companies, Oklahoma, they all come to North Dakota because we're leading in this. And we're still designing the road, but we're leading on this way, right? So,
well, it sounds good too. You mentioned how Doug Burgum, you know, you're just reaching out to him and just, you know, he believed in you guys since day one, and just to have that kind of partnership and that kind of faith in you guys, and just seeing how fast you guys have been growing and prospering since then, that speaks volumes.
Well, and just as important, I've testified, and so has Trevor, a lot out in Bismarck during sessions, and all the politicians agreed too that the state should go after this industry. So, I mean, whether you're a legislator or governor or work in some agency at the state, they all bought in. And so that was key for us to be the first and the best.
Yeah, and I can elaborate on that. I think, you know, as a test site, you know, I really work on behalf of the state of North Dakota and the partners and everyone that I work with. It's about how can we create opportunities for North Dakota, for our companies, for our citizens, everything that's here. And we're really a leader, and I really go attribute that to what Tommy said earlier, is we have this one voice concept. North Dakota is unique in that it has a small state advantage. We can access the governor. We can access Senator Hoeven. We can access all of our leaders who can help champion and put the resources where we need to, where we need them to be, but also have actions taken where we need them to be taken and to move this industry forward. Other states have challenges with that. When they start to get larger and they have more congressional delegation and there's more process to get to them, it's harder to get some things done. And so North Dakota really has this advantage where...
There's maybe more of the metro states, more millions and millions of people. You got more and more middle people to jump through and communicate with and check with so many more and more secretaries and officials before you get to where you want to go.
Exactly.
Gosh, wow. Yeah, that... Gotta love that North Dakota support. What are the next areas of radar in the state there?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a couple initiatives with that. You know, we have deployed some of the radar, we call them surveillance volumes, out in western North Dakota, Watford City, Williston area, which I think has been wonderful. It was actually kind of the test bed, what we called the key site. Now we're looking at bringing the eastern side of North Dakota online, really building on the momentum here in Grand Forks with what's going on at the Grand Forks Air Force Base and the activity out there, but also the Fargo region. And at a larger level, we also are working with the Federal Aviation Administration to explore what it would take to bring in other radar data that the FAA already has, because those radars are already out there. And they're implemented, they're running. And so from a cost efficiency standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to see what it would take to bring that in as well. But it's easy to say that it's harder to do, as we're learning. There's security requirements and costs and other things involved. But it's worth exploring, because if we're successful, it, again, continues to build a framework for allowing us to scale up what we're doing without having to be reliant on deploying our own radars across the United States.
May not be as easy as a copy paste,
right?
But you know, maybe just you know share your resources, pool minds together, and hey, all of a sudden your technology works with our technology after we just go through some of these little, you know, compatibilities or so forth.
Exactly. Yeah, that's spot on. And there's going to be different models for how we go about doing this. I know that we probably don't have all the answers, but we have the opportunity to really charge ahead and figure this out. And other states are now starting to reach out to North Dakota. We're being looked at as the leaders, and they're wanting to find opportunities to partner with us so that it's not just North Dakota. You know, we're really working for North Dakota inside North Dakota, but there's also an opportunity to lead the way for the rest of the United States in how they adopt this kind of infrastructure.
No, I think we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. I was kind of like looking at, you know, on the Vandas website there, just kind of looking up just kind of like the history of it and just how you're touching on how North Dakota is so big on just getting it going from the ground up there. I noticed like in 2019 to 2021, as per the website, it said that North Dakota invested $28 million to get things going. That had to have been huge.
That's right. There's, you know, Tommy talked about the legislative sessions. That's really where the funding has started to come from for Vantas. Is, 2019 legislative session was the first tranche of funding at $28 million. And then the second tranche would have been $19 million. And then this last round was $26 million. Infrastructure is expensive, but it's really been about figuring out how to do this the right way. Because even though I've used roads as an analogy, we're talking about aviation grade infrastructure here. You don't get to just throw a plane up in the air and say you're good. You know, what we've all had to learn as a team, all our partners, Thales, EyeSight, UAvionics, who was one of the first operators, others, is this is aviation grade infrastructure, and we don't get to shut the airspace down. You know, Delta is still flying their planes into the Grand Forks Airport many times a day, and so we have to figure out how to integrate into the airspace system correctly without creating a burden on the existing traffic. And I also think that's why North Dakota has been successful in how we work with the Federal Aviation Administration, because we, and I say the collective, we had all started back when then Governor Hovind and a delegation from North Dakota approached the FAA on this idea of a test site. And going back to the one voice concept, we are partners with the Federal Aviation Administration. We want to do it the right way. We're not there to tell them that they're doing their job wrong. We're trying to figure out how can we work together to establish the policy, the standards, and the safety requirements needed and to safely integrate these aircraft.
Now, what have you guys found that through working together over the last few several years that there's been like some major breakthroughs and new ways that, oh, hey, here's some of our research on our end, here's some of our data and research on their end. What are some good examples of that?
Well, a real good one is our 100% American-made gas-powered drone. So everybody's seen the little drones that we have, right? But we have one of the drones with 500 or 600 hours on it. It's been very reliable. The manufacturer's very good to work with. I think the drone we're using with Trevor's group now is the one model newer that goes 7 hours in the air instead of five. But they're going to be the same when they get home now. The new one, the old one's going to have the same. And so that's huge, because if we were trying to use a Chinese-built airplane, Trevor's going to go, whoa. And I understand that, right? But they also build great drones for a good price. So we have a little bit of everything. But our big drone, it's a wow. I mean, it's got a 12-foot wingspan and has a motor that makes a lot of noise. And, you know, it's an airplane. And our guys love flying it and working with Trevor's group. I mean, one of the most proud days I had was I was coming home from Denver pricing out a job, and just happened to be that I could make it to Watford City in the night before the very first flight, our very first flight. And I was sitting in between the Talus guys and my own guys, and they all keep showing me iPads and all the real airplanes that were in there, dummy airplanes in there, so my guys knew what to do. If a plane got in its way, what's the procedure? So they've had us do 1,000 different procedures so that we're safe, like Trevor mentioned earlier.
Like a lot of simulations and so forth?
Well, it's real.
Oh, like actual real on-site testing, yeah.
Yeah, like we've flown our own airplane with our own drone and whoever else Trevor asked, all in this one spot, to make sure we all do the right moves. Because that's, again, when the roads get open, what are the rules? So it's taken longer. I mean, I'm really excited about this summer. Our company has a waiver coming that Trevor's group has really helped us with. And then hopefully we'll be able to just, you know, I call it file and fly, but get after it and put on a lot of hours. Because I want to be the first North American company that's got 5,000 hours of beyond line of sight, because that differentiates us for doing different kinds of work.
It's proven that track record. Checking all the boxes, and all of a sudden, you know, look at all your accomplishments from over the year, and you guys are talking about just all your guys' rapid growth and just like all the major breakthroughs you've been making on collaborating with the various partners from over the years.
Then we finally landed a pretty big project within the state. Our company flies in 45 states, but not enough in North Dakota. But we finally landed now a power company and do 750 miles of power lines in the state. Well, we'll be working with Trevor. Maybe the first time we do it, we'll maybe compare what it would cost us if we could do it beyond line of sight compared to the old way. Power lines are a little different than oil pipelines and different things. You got to really slow down and look at the nuts and bolts. But it may help us, right? And if the southern radar goes in where he says it is, and maybe one more ground sky, maybe another, you know, then we're where we need to be. I want you guys to come out too. We'll have a Grand Sky event, what Trevor calls his MNOC, but it makes your guys' bunker here look like not a lot of tech. But
oh, gosh.
Your bunker looks good. But well, it's pretty nice.
When you're talking with drones and the latest in drones and code and how you guys are staying up in the latest and greatest, I can only imagine what your state-of-the-art facilities are. But, you know, it's interesting. You brought up a couple of topics here that are kind of on our great way to pivot to. The MNOC event here. Would you care to elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, so the MNOC is it's Mission Network Operations Center, and when you're deploying infrastructure like what we're doing, you need to have a facility that is constantly monitoring how that infrastructure is performing. And so if you know, for those in North Dakota, there's the ND Roads app that the DOT puts out there. You know, so in the wintertime, you're checking to see when Tommy's going back and forth from his lake place, he can see what he's getting himself into. It would be very similar to that, except for the infrastructure that we have deployed for enabling Beyond Visual Line of Sight. And so, yeah, we're out at the Grand Sky facility. Which is out at the Grand Forks Air Force Base. We have a building out there that has this operations center. It's got the six screens, you know, to really show the maps and, you know, kind of give you the green and red lights for if everything's performing as expected. It's a really fancy check engine light, but it's...
Oh, I love that analogy. Right. I'm definitely familiar with the check engine light.
Yeah, well, and it makes it simple, right? If your check engine light's not on, you're good to go. But from an FAA safety perspective, it's a little bit more complicated than that. We really needed to show that there is a system that, you know, if something happens unexpected, because in aviation we have to constantly ask ourselves that, like, what could happen? And then when those things could happen, what are the procedures or the responses? And so that's what this operations center is all about, is really having that central facility to do that. And it was built in a way that allows us to scale. So as we bring other sites online, it all connects to the state terrestrial fiber that all goes back to that facility. And so at this point, it's a pretty low cost to add additional sites on.
Now I'm sorry, go ahead, Tommy.
Well, our first flight, I'll never forget, because it's my most expensive asset. All these people are running their machines, and I told the guy from Thales, I said, I hope that baby comes back, because it was going to 5,000 feet for an hour. Well, you can't see it at 5,000, right? And so everything worked, and now we have hundreds of flights behind us and different things, but I was like,
got a lot of reps in. No, it's interesting, Trevor. You brought up, you know, getting all these practice runs in case something happens to prepare for it. Has there ever been on any that you can share of that any instance that you could happened that you ran into where to expect the unexpected? Just and how did you guys persevere and learn from that experience?
Right. Well, I'll be careful because...
I mean, that you can talk about it. I don't want to get you in trouble.
If you don't want to tell my story, I'll tell ours with Nick.
I'll defer to you on that. I'll kind of set up from a standpoint of, like, aviation safety. You know, we are a test site, so we expect that things will happen. I can say at a high level as a test site, even before Vantis, you know, so my prior role was the director of safety at the test site. And I remember, you know, first week on the job in that particular role, you know, I've heard through the history of the test site, which is now over 10 years old, you know, different companies bringing their different assets and saying, like, this is a really safe aircraft. Nothing bad has ever happened to it. And in my first week acting in the capacity of director of safety, there was an aircraft smoking in the dirt and because it crashed unexpectedly. And, you know, the way we design our operations is these are done in a way that it's a controlled environment. So we anticipate and expect these smaller drones to come out of the sky and impact. And so we have protocol for that. We have process for that. But what I would say at a broad level is it's expected in our industry. It's not like we're Delta flying around thousands upon thousands of hours a day. We do a very controlled environment with a small amount of operations and plan for that. But so as far as the fun stories, it usually incriminates folks because their asset, and I don't want to do that. But over to you,
1,000%.
So I know the owner of the drone that crashed in the dirt, be me.
Uh-oh.
And it was interesting, though, because... His predecessor and I were speaking somewhere the next day. And I think I called him at like 5:15. I said, Nick, who's going to open up and who's going to close? And he said, well, I can tell by your voice you haven't talked to your pilots today.
Uh-oh. Dun,
said,
dun, dun.
No. Well, about an hour before that, they were flying and there was a software glitch. The pilot thinks there was some jammer in a semi. Who knows what the... But Nick was very thankful, his predecessor, in that our guys were so professional, had fire extinguishers, closed off the space, did, you know. And now I argue with the guy who was flying it. He always claims he never crashed one. I said, the hell you didn't. You did the first one. Well, it wasn't me. Well, no, it was. You were at the controls.
Nuh-uh.
But it was that kind of testing, right? It was a different airplane than we fly today, but it was American-made as well. And, yeah, I mean, and it... And it's expensive because the insurance on them, they cover about half of what you paid for them, and then you don't have them for a few months. And so none of us want to crash, but we have to be in the air too. So like Trevor said, it's going to happen. I mean,
yeah, and that's one of the challenges with this industry is what we have is a mixing of you know, kind of high tech, new technology, entrepreneurial activity going on, but it's crashing into this. this legacy aviation history and how we do things in the aviation world, which is now over 100 years old. And a lot of those rules and regulations and policy, you know, like the difficult part is a lot of that has actually been written in blood. You know, there's been accidents that happened in aviation over the century that have led to the rules and regulations we have today. And so it's difficult because we have this amazing opportunity, especially in North Dakota, you know, finding how can we have these drones. And today we tend to think of these small drones off the shelf, something you can buy, you know, to Tommy saying like these foreign made. But what we're really laying a foundation for is a really professional side of this, where we're talking about drones that could weigh thousands of pounds that are hauling cargo and supplies across North Dakota, because today it's actually really hard to get the pilots needed to fly these aircraft. You know, so when FedEx is landing in Fargo, for example, you know, they've only got so many assets they can deploy to bring some of that cargo in North Dakota, some of it into Montana. Well, with this technology, we're really setting up an opportunity where maybe you have a mixing of traditional aviation and, we'll say, newer aviation, and working together in a common environment here to actually bring us the, you know, the supplies and supply chain that we need in some of these harder to reach parts of North Dakota and neighboring states.
Now you brought up there. Oh, Tommy, you got me looking
that's the big drone.
Oh wow, that's one of your bigger ones there.
That is the big one.
Now. Okay, wow, absolutely. Gosh, how long does that one take to construct? Your average one for one of those?
I don't know. I just know what they cost.
right. Absolutely. Now it's interesting. You brought up. You know, you've had these new facility upgrades in Watford and Williston. We're saying these were along the radar type of facilities to help with your latest technology, or a different type of facility?
Well, so for us, what it was is it's the actual radar itself, you know, the piece of technology on top of a tower that's spinning. And the purpose of it is it's really looking for traffic in the airspace system. Radars are very common in the United States. That's how the air traffic control system works. So really with our partners with Thales, we said, okay, this is what we need. Thales then found the technical solution and actually did the install, sighted out the radar, did whatever the engineers do, because I'm not an engineer. And then, you know, then we calibrate it with, you know, Tommy was saying earlier, you know, you do flight tests. That's essentially what we did as a test site, was we had the unmanned aircraft and we had traditional aircraft flying what we call encounters. They're basically scripted maneuvers in and around the radar site to test and validate everything. So there's a radar site in both Watford City and in Williston. The operations center that's monitoring everything and where all the data feeds come into is at Grand Sky at the Mission Network Operations Center.
And in fact, from hearing from a little while back, it sounds like you got more of these radar systems are in the work to help just
that's correct
bring in more and more data and just make things better and better.
Yeah, more sites being evaluated both in Grand Forks and in Fargo, and then looking at other sources of radar information through the FAA, which brings in a national feed. Not that we're going to get the national feed; we'd start with just North Dakota, but at least setting ourselves up for existing radars. Why pay for something new if we can pull in an existing feed?
Absolutely. Tommy, go ahead.
So since Trevor keeps reminding me of history, one of the other key points was North Dakota's weather, right? So I need to fly that big drone I showed you all year, not just 3 months in the summer. But can it fly in what type of weather? And can we make it match like a little Cessna? That's kind of our goal. So all four seasons were critical, and the lack of population, knowing that we probably wouldn't have picketers and people complaining. We'd tell them we were in your area. Early on when we were flying some ag, we would just tell the local crop duster that we're over at the Woods farm by this town. Well, then they would fly over to check our drone out. Well,
wait a second.
And we're at the same altitude, right? We're at 400 feet. That's what they're at, 400 or 500.
That could be a potential question mark there.
another one was with our old drone, the electric one, is it was quiet and birds would fly up to it.
Oh, they were curious.
And then we had a project for the city one time out at the lagoons to keep the birds away with drones. And our second day, a little drone, a goose looks right at it, flies right at it, and rams it.
Oh, God. got territorial on you.
Yeah, so you just don't know, right? I mean, what the problem could be.
Gotta love the unpredictable wildlife of North Dakota.
Well, and I can pile on one of the very early, very first projects of the Northern Plains U.S. test site was agricultural work out of the Carrington Research Extension Center. And so they have some livestock out there, and the big question was, what would the cows do? How would they react to the drones? And so you didn't know, and from what I understand, all cattle is a little bit different. So we put the drone up, and all they did is they just watched it the whole way, going up and down, and they didn't care.
What's this new thing?
Pretty much.
No, that's got to be one of those things you probably didn't think of when doing your initial tests or planning this out. How would just your average day wildlife interact with, you know, we've probably seen countless automobiles or tractors or other farming equipment, but never a drone. And what is this new technological marvel?
Right. Well, and that's actually what's kind of fun about this is aviation has historically had a little bit of separation from, you know, the ground. You know, planes tend to go higher, generally speaking. You know, North Dakota and other states, we have aerial applicators which hug the ground, but not in the urban environments. What drones are starting to do is they start to play in this space that otherwise is untested. The communities, like municipalities and cities, livestock. And so this data is actually very interesting and intriguing to the Federal Aviation Administration, who is responsible and in charge of helping maintain the regulatory and safety of the airspace system. So this is actually part of the reason why, like, the test site program exists is we're here, we're local, we're working with the local communities and the local industry partners, and we can provide some of these lessons learned at a national level for helping shape the future policy.
Tell them about the fire department, the sheriff's department.
Yeah, so there's been, you know, through the years and even more recently too, there's been a lot of activity early on. Actually, one of the very first programs and projects in North Dakota was the Grand Forks Sheriff's Office, the Northeastern Regional UAS Unit. I hope I said that right. I was actually part of that in the early days, kind of shaping what does it look like for drones being used in you know, first response, law enforcement, other public safety aspects. And it was a really intriguing program, and I think it's still running today. And then more recently with Vantis, you know, we've identified a need to bring in more public safety, public use, government-type operations that can impact communities. And so the fire department and our team have been working together to go through training. Fire department here locally in Grand Forks looking to use these assets. And there's been some use cases. There was fires up by the university that they were able to use a drone to help them better position the necessary assets for containing and extinguishing the fire. And so looking just to scale up those kinds of use cases in the community.
Was that pretty mind-blowing? You can only imagine that firefighters, you know, they're used to, you know, doing their tried and true system for containing fires throughout time, throughout decades and decades and decades. And then all of a sudden they get exposed to this new technology and all of a sudden like, hey, we can do our job way more efficiently, have all new avenues to explore.
Well, you have eye in the sky the whole time, and I have cameras that can pick out the hotspot out of all hotspots, the hottest, and those kind of things. They just have more information.
Yeah, you know? And in the future, what like I hope we see is a place where when we've kind of got all the bugs figured out, once that 911 call comes in, or you know the agency first gets notified, what you're starting to see in other parts of the U.S. and we'll explore here too is essentially the drone gets deployed as a first responder, because that thing can just go straight to where it needs to get eyes on whatever situation may be happening. Well, meanwhile, a first response on the ground has to navigate through the roadways. There could be traffic. There could be other things going on that's preventing them from getting there in the most efficient way. So if you can get eyes on whatever the incident is, that feed can be getting to those first responders in advance so they can be making decisions before they ever arrive on site. So it's a pretty cool and amazing opportunity.
That paints a really good picture. Like, you know, you think, you know, I've had to call police or and fire departments in the past. You know, usually they get there within a few minutes or several minutes. But still, if you could get a drone out there like 70% quicker, that gives them a couple minutes to study the scene, examine it, and just like you detailed there.
Well, lost people is a big one. Visualization of an accident. People have brought up when the school bus crashed with the kids from, was it Hatton, right, or Northwood?
It's one of those small communities.
Yeah, and, you know, if we could have had a drone there quicker than anything, and then they would know how many hospitals they need, how many people, how many. So there are a lot more of those uses, and we'll keep, you know, knocking them down one by one. You know,
I see. Oh, go ahead.
It's. I think Tommy just alluded to it. There is. It's maybe easy to think about the minutes in let's say more of the urban environment, but once you go rural, I think that's where it really can shine the value, right? Is what Tommy said is like the lost hiker. One of the use cases we saw out in the Watford City area is McKenzie County in North Dakota is larger than the state of Delaware, and yet they only have 2 ambulances, and it takes them an hour and a half to go end to end. So if you have 2 ambulances, and let's say you have 3 calls going on simultaneously, where do you deploy those assets? And in McKenzie County is where you have the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. So that lost hiker has a situation that incapacitates them. Is it, you know, what are they working with? What are the first responders working with? What are the medical facilities working with when that patient arrives? That's where these use cases really shine.
Gosh. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a really great use case that's a sad story, but I had gotten a call. We had offices in Watford City. I got a call on the Monday of Labor Day or Memorial Day, the last weekend of the summer, whatever one that one is. And I got a call from Bismarck, from a high up person there, and they said, "Do you have any pilots there?" And I said, 2. What's up? He said, "My son's best friend just drowned in the Yellowstone River." I looked at who our pilots were. I said, "I'll have 4 pilots there at sunup." So then I called his predecessor. I said, "Emergency." And so then they relayed out to D.C. or wherever he had to call to give my own guys the waiver to fly around, like, without doing a document every flight. And so we ran the airspace for a couple of days, and there was helicopters and tail draggers and our drones and people on the ground and just EMS
we'll be search and rescue, yeah, or search all, and recover
we're all,
operation.
We're all looking for the little boy, and our cameras didn't find him because they needed sonar under the water, and they ended up finding him, I think, on the 3rd day. But to watch all these different agencies from Montana, North Dakota, sheriffs, EMS, you know, it was really wow. And then some of our cameras, we could take off the drone and put it on a helicopter and take it off, put it on a plane. I also, our company has it's called the KSI box, but I call it the magic box. And we can live feed to any encrypted email in the country, in the world, what the drone is seeing live. So in that case, we had 130 people that weren't there looking for the boy.
Wow.
Because we would get notified, we're going up. And it was a wow. And then the lady who ran it, Trevor, I'm sure, knows who Carolyn Joppy. She was in a trailer with a generator, and she would text me, "You tell me when they're going up because I want to watch this and look for the boy." Because everybody knew the little boy in Watford, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad reasoning, but it was great to have all this technology and the ability to move.
I mean, unfortunate circumstance for it, but it was a way where, you know, it's going through, searching through that river took 3 days. Imagine if you didn't have the drones or how long it could have taken to recover the body without them. Yeah.
One more short project and another emergency, but Montreal, Williams County had all these power poles get busted off. Same thing. And now Trevor was the boss, I believe, at that time. And we just said, "Hey, we got to get in the air out there. And what are you going to do and who are you working for?" And got the FAA and DC to make stuff happen because people were going to be out of power for a month. And we were actually part of a presentation for the power company that we saved some people 10 days and no power. Because we could just go count all the poles. They could order all the poles. They could get all the help they needed. And when the snow was gone, they were sticking poles, not, "We don't know what we need, what tech, you know."
Yeah, instead of just going out there blind, your guys' drones did all the research and provide them the data like 100 times faster than they would have done boots on the ground.
So those were 2 examples of probably 1,000 sorties we've done for Trevor over the years, but those were really serious. The other ones are making it so I can fly in the future. You know, I mean, doing the safety things.
Right.
And I come from aviation. I want it to be safe.
Absolutely.
I don't want to bend any rules. I want to do it right, but I want to keep progressing too.
Now, I notice we've got more topics on the agenda, but I see we got a question in the chat. And if people are watching this live on the live stream here, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, on GFBS, or the iSight or Hive social media channels, we encourage you to comment and question away. We got Corey Palm in the chat saying, "What are your thoughts on U.S.-built drones versus drones from overseas and government agencies not being able to utilize them, even though they might have better software in some cases?"
Want me to go first, Trevor?
Which one of you would like to field that one?
So we own American-made drones, and we own foreign-built drones. It is a problem in America having more drones built. I also think that it would be extremely difficult not to have some part, some component from overseas on that drone. We don't have any vehicles that don't have some foreign part on them. Even if I own a GM-built pickup, I know it's got foreign parts on there. So it's a tough one because of the state America's in. I'm working on a manufacturer right now to come to North Dakota. It's not a heavy lift where they're from. They're in the tech industry, so they don't have to sell 100 drones to stay open. They could just sell me 10, and still the company will make it as an entrepreneurs, you know. But it's really critical that we have American-made drones and that they're priced competitively, you know.
Heck yeah, 1,000%. Tommy, I know you mentioned a little bit earlier. I wanted to make sure we got the full details on it in case there was anything else you wanted to bring up and touch on a little bit. You mentioned a waiver for eyesight is incoming there. Is there anything else on that to touch on?
Yeah, so we've been working with Trevor's team for probably 3 years, Trevor, or four, flying. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And with this plane that I've told you about, and this in December, Trevor's group and my team guys filed for a waiver so that we would be legal to go fly without Trevor and the FAA holding our hand. You know, we've proven that we can be safe. We'll follow the rules that they give us. And so there's two different waivers, and we're trying to get the better of the two. I know we're approved for the one, so we'll know in a couple weeks here if we get the better one.
Fingers crossed, everything goes through. Sounds like it's going to ease things up for you guys way much more.
Well, Trevor's got a good team. I mean, one of the guys we work with on his team used to fly for us, and we travel a lot, and he's excellent to work with. This young man named Hunter, he was the one that helped fill out the paperwork, and so it's really exciting for us, mainly for Trevor and I, because we were here day one, and so to actually get there is really huge. And when that happens, we're going to have a big event.
Popping the champagne, as they say.
Yeah, we'll have Trevor's group and my team, and we'll invite the politicians that all helped us along the way, and which is all of them. I mean, it's party neutral. Everyone supported this industry. And then have a company like the radar company Thales as well, because they're a big piece of it too, and kind of have a gathering and a...
Have all the partners that made it possible there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and I could comment too that from our standpoint, this is a huge win. And from my team standpoint, one of the goals we have is not just create like a one-off approval, and not to diminish what we're going to do with eyesight here, mm-hmm. but what we really have done, and again, I'll bring in the Federal Aviation Administration as a partner in this, is we've really approached this about like, how do we make this happen? We're going to use this as a test case, an example case, but we really want to lay the playbook on how to do this repeatedly, because it's not valuable for just one company to get something. It's really valuable for North Dakota and for the U.S. that we create a framework for a lot of industry folks to be able to essentially copy-paste to make some changes to their specific use case and then go get the approval they need. And that's what you're seeing in the history of drones and UAS in the United States is, you know, even the test site program, I can say for those who've been around long enough, they'll know what this is. But even pre-Part 107, there was Section 333 exemptions. And before that, there was no real legal mechanism to fly outside of public agencies. You know, we've really, from the beginning, laid the groundwork for this is how you do this. This is what you need to provide data for. This is what your flight path and flight cards need to look like in order to appease the safety requirements for the FAA. So this will be really exciting because it opens the door to bring the next conversation up, which is how do we go for the next aircraft or the next company or the next operation, and how do we stretch the limit even further?
Gosh. And I see a company like ours in the next 5 years needing a drone that needs some type of short runway. Right now we don't, it might not be an airport. It could be, but it probably would be some little grass strip somewhere, you know, and we need 100 yards to get it off the ground. But now that drone probably stay in the air 10 or 12 hours. And then how much more data can we take down and what can we do? And I want one other comment, since it's the season, but it's not happening now. But for years, both Trevor's group and my group have done flood patrol. And social media told me about the years past. And, you know, one time, maybe 3-4 years ago, when it was a good flood, big flood, I had between airplanes and drones everything from South Dakota border to Canada, all one day's data. I had guys in Fargo with drones, guys in Grand Forks with drones. The Fargo guys went as far south as Wahpeton, and then our airplane we had from Grand Forks to Canada. But that's great data, right? And I just said, guys, we were working for one person. Then I said, let's get it all. Today's crest day. Go get it. Somebody might need it, you know.
Everyone is like, hey, today's the ultimate test. We're going to get the whole verticality of the state's data. And everyone came together. Heck yeah. Now, I see Corey has another question there in the chat. Are you helping eliminate or reduce the VLOS requirements for everyone, especially the egg pilots?
I'm guessing he meant beyond visual line of sight requirements is what I'm guessing. Visual requirements. So, yeah, I mean, the short answer is what we're really trying to do with the Vantis system is exactly that. Is there's a framework there, a technology there. Then the aircraft, like what Tommy's doing and what other companies are going to do, will have the required data and we'll say certifications, quote unquote, because we don't know what that's going to look like yet for the FAA, that these aircraft can fly, you know, well beyond visual line of sight. That's what he's getting at. Is today the requirements are you have to maintain visual on the aircraft, and that pretty much limits you to about a mile, mile and a half. Maybe there's some provisions for getting out there a little bit farther, but it really hinders the ability to use the drone for its intended purpose. When an aircraft can fly 5 to 7 hours like Tommy's can, okay, so you're flying a circle for the next 5 hours? Like, that's really not that exciting. And so, yes, we are trying to do that. That's exactly the vision behind Vantis, actually. The real vision was a statewide beyond visual line of sight network. And the original concept of this is we already have towers that are owned and operated by the state of North Dakota through the Department of Transportation, through ITD, through the State Interoperability Radio Network. So conceptually, we asked ourselves, why couldn't you put on, you know, radars and radios? The radios are needed to control the aircraft on these towers because they're already connected. And now we've got a BVLOS network, and now we just have to have the aircraft that have the capability of flying through the network. I think about, like, your cell phone flying. It hops from tower to tower.
Right.
That's essentially what these aircraft would be doing as well. And since you're on a network, now wherever the pilot may be can have that feed sitting right in front of them, and they can see all the other traffic in the airspace system and see and avoid as per the FAA requirements. So that is the vision. That is exactly what we're working towards. It is a harder vision to achieve than I think anybody fully realized, but we are making headway. That's exactly what this waiver, I think, is actually going to be an exemption that we're getting with EyeSight and what our past approvals have set us up for.
Now, I know one of the topics we were talking before the show here about, I know you're looking forward to talking about, Trevor, was that you attended a big event here in San Diego here not too long ago.
It'll be upcoming.
I'm sorry. I'm getting my words mixed up. But this is the Association for Uncrewed Vehicle Systems International, or as short, OFSI. I'm probably butchering that.
Yeah, AUVSI is what we call it. And they put on an annual event called Exponential. And AUVSI is one of the large advocacy groups in, you know, it's international. And there's a chapter here in Grand Forks. Renee Shelton's the president of the chapter here. But they put on this event called Exponential. In a few weeks, it's down in San Diego. I think next year is in Houston. But this is really one of the larger shows where it comes to all of autonomy. You know, there's ground, there's sea, there's air. You know, Tommy and I have been going for a long time, you know, when it was probably mostly just air and it was called something else back then. But yeah, that's going to be in San Diego. And it's an event that, you know, I think that as the test site, there's actually six other test sites in the United States. So we're all kind of expected to be there. Kind of a lot of industries there. The commercial part of what we think is going to happen in the future is going to be at this event. So it's a pretty big event. There's other events as well, but that is definitely one of the larger ones.
It's like, well, as you say, like maybe one of the Grand Slam events for the field of drones there.
Pretty much.
I was kind of looking on their website there for the Exponential 2024 website, and it's just kind of talking about how it's like the biggest gathering of nonprofits dedicated for the advancement of uncrewed systems and robotics. So I can only imagine just all the talking shop and business that goes down there, and just, you know, possible trading of just tech for you guys. There's got to be a lot of just great catching up and just learning maybe possible new things to team up with.
There'll probably be 10 or 12 companies from North Dakota there. We'll be one of them. Trevor's one of them. People from Grand Sky, people from Fargo that are in the industry. I mean, it's if you like tech and whiz bang, it's a wow. I mean, I remember seeing the first robotic Bobcat, and I thought to myself, wow, I can barely drive one of them, and all the different maneuvers you can make. But it had a big dome on the top, and they use it in military for looking for mines, you know. And
Would they have prototypes of some of the latest things they're working on there to either try out or do demonstrations of?
Yeah, like I send my pilots to it because they can find new toys that they want me to get. I go to our end user events, like electrical company meetings and ag meetings and things like that, because I need customers, but we also need the technology. So North Dakota will have a great presence there. We're a player at that show, which North Dakota usually isn't a player at a lot of shows because we're small, but at that one we are. And it's really fun to see the growth and the change from when we first went.
Yeah, and a big change now too is, Tommy's hitting it. It's a great place to see all the new tech, new aircraft. You know, you're on the trade floor, you're going to see everything from the aircraft that have been around for a while and they're really maturing. You've got the one that's likely the one and only prototype. But it's great because you get to see all these different companies trying to take a different angle at getting into this space. And it's more than just the trade floor. You know, there is the keynote speakers that they usually bring in some
high profile panels, folks. Presentations.
Yeah, there's educational sessions, there's keynotes, there's everything to really, you know, dissect the different parts of this. But the real value of something like this is in the networking. It is that you have all these folks in one place with different opportunities to network and collaborate and build opportunities. And that's really the value of these kind of events.
One of my guys is speaking at something there, Doug McDonald. Well, he's been in the industry a long time, and he's probably talking about BB loss or something. But it's great because it gets your name out there and it gets people asking questions and things like that. So.
See, speaking of questions, got another question in the chat there from Paul. With the personal cheap drones people have, is it legal to shoot them down if they are trying to peep into bedrooms, etc.? So maybe some people getting your average drone from you could buy at your electronics shop and getting a little too curious.
I'll take the shorter version, and Trevor can get this. There's already a peeping Tom law, which is bad for me to say, being my name, but. It doesn't matter how I look in your window, it's illegal. So mm-hmm. With a drone, with a phone, what kind of ties into this is privacy. I don't think our world has it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you got, 40 cameras in here? 20?
Oh, gosh. Let me make a checklist here.
So I think that ship sailed. Mm-hmm. We do respect the landowners and the people, and we notify them first, and we do a lot of things to prevent any ill will feelings mm-hmm. or things. It was a big topic years ago. It kind of has simmered some, but what do you think, Trevor?
Yeah. To Tommy's point, there's peeping Tom laws. There is precedent in judicial interpretations and quite honestly, it kind of hits a limit in my area of expertise. I can say from an aviation policy perspective is that shooting down anything flying through the air, drones are considered aircraft, so shooting at any aircraft, regardless if it's a small, cheap drone or a large one, is actually a federal offense, and so I would have to say I'd advise not doing that.
Don't did.
But the question is actually a difficult one because it's intermixing, you know, policy and judicial precedent that is really not in the scope of, we'll say, like aviation safety and regulations. That's about safety of operation of aircraft in the airspace system. It's one of those, we'll call them sensitive topics that are going to need to be carefully considered and evaluated through, I think, different parties and different mechanisms.
So it's maybe a work in progress, see how things go as the years go on.
Yes.
Maybe. I got a couple more questions here as we wind down here. I want to make sure we hit up primary contacts with the FAA. I think you guys hit up on this a little earlier. Were there any ones we missed for contacts with FAA as your guys' partnership or experience with them moves forward?
Well, I can comment to that. Is North Dakota has a really good spot here in that, like I said, we've really built a partnership with the FAA. And it's not about, oh, I know this one person at the FAA. It's about having, you know, actual agreements in place with them to move forward. And at the end of the day, we don't get any like special privileges of the FAA. We don't, we don't get approvals that anybody else can't do. What I get is that relationship, is I can go have a conversation with the right people at the FAA, because it's more than just a person. It's many people, different agencies. I'll say this is humorous, and I've told this to the FAA folks, is FAA, if you've ever heard, you know, trying to conceptualize space, you know, from an astronomy perspective, the human mind physically can't comprehend the distance between planets and the sun. That's actually the size of the FAA as well. It is that massive of an organization. It's really funny when you're in the room with them and they're introducing each other. But that's just how big they are. But they have a purpose and a need. And so we have these programs. The first one was the test site program. It's an official program that was congressionally mandated. We competed for it. We've obtained it. And there's an ongoing agreement and dialogue with the FAA through that relationship. We also have another program called the FAA Beyond Program. It was another program that was stood up, started in 2017. We also competed and awarded that. And so contacts at the FAA really flow through these programs of letting us have the ability to call them up, talk through. I always like to say it's like the safe space is, look, I've got an idea. And since the FAA is a regulated agency or a regulatory agency, a lot of pilots and aviation folks, you get a little nervous when the FAA is in the room because you don't want to incriminate yourself.
These are the big wigs.
These are the big wigs. And so what these programs let us do, though, is we can sit in the room with them and we can have a safe space to talk and say, look, I've got crazy ideas. Let's work through what it really means without, and that also includes lessons learned. You know, we've done things, we've learned things, aircraft have come down, and we don't fear repercussion of that. It's no, that is a learning experience for all of us, because at the end of the day, their job is to create an environment that enables industry and government agencies to be able to operate these aircraft. And I think the long term is that, you know, the drone pilot or the UAS pilot is treated and looks just like a fixed wing pilot and a rotary wing pilot. I'm a fixed wing pilot. And you always jab at each other, but at the end of the day, these pilots are operating a flying machine or a flying contraption of different type through the same airspace system, and these drones will be no different.
I see Corey Palma has a comment kind of correlating with that about, he's saying, we are very fortunate that our state has very good folks within the FAA that are great to work with as we navigate these new challenges and ideas. Kind of just bouncing right off that. Another last topic I have for you here before we wrap up here is companies that have flown in the Vantis network. So just various companies that you guys have worked with in the past year.
Yeah, there's various companies. Like, you know, we've called out some of them with EyeSight, with UAvionics. We've actually put out types of mechanisms, procurement mechanisms, where we can have ongoing relationship with other companies. And the challenge with it is that all companies are at different stages of development, different goals and objectives of what they're trying to achieve. And as the state of North Dakota trying to push this forward, you know, we're not in a position where we have to work with the companies that are in a state to move forward on, and Talus as well. So, you know, I've called out the big highlights of EyeSight and UAvionics. We've had other companies that some of them are not in North Dakota, some of them are, and I'm hesitant to call out all the names without like having prior coordinated. That's the only
right
thing
right.
That's why I'm not.
We had foreign countries here early on. That flew out of Hillsboro. We had that Zipline company. Are they foreign or are they regular?
No, Zipline's here. They just they've got their early wins actually operating in Africa essentially medical delivery. You know, Africa as a continent has a lot of challenges in terms of remote spaces and getting supply chains to the right location, and so Zipline has a system that allows them to go up and essentially drop a package and return.
Wow.
They are, you know, they're partnered with Walmart in a different part of the U.S., but they've actually established a cold weather site here in North Dakota to help continue to mature their product.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a huge makeaways. Partnering with Walmart for deliveries, that's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, and those are the kind of things we want to make sure that we're setting up for in North Dakota is, you know, North Dakota is not the first target for these big companies to establish a base of operation, but we can certainly be working with them to develop the technology that can really increase efficiency in the supply chain and capabilities for them. You know, everything from the public safety, like we've hit on early, to you know, Zipline with cargo delivery, and then you can really scale that to the larger aircraft into the future. Where, let's say Tommy said the Cessna size aircraft. When we get to that kind of capability, where we can run routine flights on an aircraft that size, you really have the potential to start carrying something on board that aircraft that can significantly impact citizens.
For the uninitiated, what would you compare? What would be a comparative size to the to a Cessna?
SUV size.
SUV size
with wings.
Wow, that is thinking about people. You know, maybe just average. You know, just layman for drones. Maybe think of your average big drone you find at a Walmart or so. Now compared to that, that's just bigger and better, as they say.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Trevor can correct me, but I used to work with FedEx back in the day, and they're little planes that go to the rural communities only have one pilot in them. Well, what if he has a heart attack or has a problem? Could they make that plane autonomous then? Because of technology to make sure it lands safely. Well, that's another avenue, right?
Gotcha.
And people have built autonomous airplanes, you know, retrofitted airplanes all over the world.
Taking autopilot to a whole new level. I mean, and for like especially great, great emergency situations just like that one may happen. Yeah. Last question I have for you is I think you touched on a couple of these, but jobs created from Vantist and test site that we haven't hit on yet. That's got to be with all this continual growth, just all kinds of new opportunities for people.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I'm actually not well prepared to answer that because we're actually going to be going through some economic impact kind of studies to evaluate exactly that as we prepare for legislative session. You know, we need to be armed with what is the value we're creating. And, you know, we have the team as the test site, but our real value is in, like, these kind of relationships with industry where we're enabling things with industry. You know, Talus, as our industry partner, has several jobs that are directly supporting the North Dakota team. The bigger portfolio of the test site beyond even Vantist, you know, we're doing a lot of work out at Grand Sky helping enable some of those operations. You know, just a fun fact is Grand Sky has daily beyond visual line of sight activity happening. You know, General Atomics is operating their systems out there for training purposes, and they're doing that every single day. It's nice out, and that original capability was really developed out of the partnership between the test site and Grand Sky figuring out how to do that. And other companies have benefited from that. You know, we've been able to see other companies fly their smaller drones using the same capability, and so the actual number of here's the jobs that have been created or impacted is hard to quantify for me right now, but we are aware of, you know, those are the kinds of things that are now happening on a daily basis that we have helped make happen here in North Dakota.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, so I can probably answer that a little too. Trevor's like one of our tools. You know, I would say 4 jobs at my place are directly related to flying with him out of 30 some. But then when we get this waiver, it might go to 6 to 10 real fast if I can find business for it. And I think the better one is, you know, the UND, we haven't talked about them much, but they did a drone program before anybody could spell drones years ago. And that then from somebody like me, I know where I can maybe get employees from and keep them here. And so from the 10 years ago or however long ago I met Trevor, you know, statewide, we're probably at a couple thousand jobs statewide now. When you take all the schools have programs in something in drones, the Happy Hooligans fly drones now. I don't know how big they are, but they're a good number. On the base is military drones. Then across the base is Grand Sky. They're probably pushing 300-400 out there now. Companies like mine, there's probably 10 small operators in the state now. That are all going to be looking at BV loss, I would think, or the ones that can run a company and be entrepreneurs. So it has a big effect.
It's interesting you bring that up. You know, military drones at schools having drone programs, they're, you know, maybe unknowingly all of a sudden, hey, these are our potential future employees.
That's absolutely correct. And Tommy's hitting it is like, you know, UND built the first, you know, 4-year degree program around drones in UAS. And the real opportunity here is in, you know, even just recent participation in certain events is there's an opportunity to help retain workforce in North Dakota. You know, everyone has a workforce challenge, but this is a high tech field, and it's not just a drone discipline, but it's engineers, it's computer scientists, it's all disciplines that are going to be part of this. And, you know, the growth out at Grand Sky is amazing because these companies are hiring high value, high paid positions. And it's even a really unique opportunity for folks who otherwise haven't considered North Dakota to be their home. we're actually seeing, and even some on my team who maybe came from Southern California, and that's where they grew up. But they've actually come to grow and love North Dakota. They've moved their families here. And I'm seeing more and more of that. And Grant Sky is really a big conduit to it. But then the way the university system's working, the way the public education system's working, is we're really getting kids in the school system exposed to this almost from day one. It's really setting them up on a path where, you know, they don't feel like they have to leave North Dakota in order to find a good job. They have that choice to stay here and find that locally.
Wow.
The company that I know I work with, but I'm pretty certain they do, is a company called Fenworks that has drone racing.
And wow.
It's big time. But we sponsored them, our company, because they're going to get the ninth graders and 10th graders. And mom and dad, most of my pilots were former gamers. Well, mom and dad, it's okay to do this, you know.
Well, when you think about it, I know those big, they have the annual robotics competition at the Alaris Center. I know you can make all kinds of, if they have awesome, cool competitions. I know a lot of people that are in it. I see Paul in the chat saying drone racing is intense. Just imagine the possibilities when you see, hey, this is going to be on ESPN or have its own awesome competition there where it's just big, big crowds and bigger and better exposure. Heck yeah.
One of Trevor's employees used to work for me, and I'll end with this one, but he says, well, Tommy, he's a really sharp tech kid named Scott Keen. And I said, Keener, they don't fly like we fly. And his answer was, I want to get into more of the technology. I already won the drone racing championship of college. I have my own drones. I can fly. And it was like, oh, okay. And they are more tech because of what they do compared to what, you know. But wow. It was funny, you know. I said, okay, good luck, man.
Knows what he's doing. I see Paul in the chat following up with going over 100 miles per hour in those drone races. Like, wow.
You can find a video clip from Red Bull. They do all sorts of, crazy things. And one of them is a drag race between a drone and an F1 doing a,
I know Red Bull, they have their top of the line. They're always dominating the F1 world. But going toe-to-toe with the drone, I got to just search like F1 drone race kind of, and that should take me there.
I can spoil it for you if you really want, or you can go find it yourself.
Sure, why not? Why not? I'm all for it. I'll probably look it up after we wrap up here. But wow, guys, I've learned so much today. This hour just flew by. Is there anything we missed here before we wrap up here? I think we covered it. How about just the contact? I got some of your contact info here. I got websites and email. Or would you guys like to just say best way to reach out and get a hold of you, either of you?
Yeah, I mean, for the test site, we have we have the website npuasts.com, and it's Northern Plains UAS test site. We're local here in Grand Forks, but we really represent the whole state. And so we're on that. And with the Vantis initiative, it's vantisuas.com. We're all on the social medias. That's probably the easiest way to send it out there. And there's the contact us kind of form that gets flowed through. So that's how you can reach our team.
We got really wrapped up in all things test site, but our co-sponsor, The Hive, has 20 some companies there right now relating to drone industry, 20 some, and there's others in town. So it's really coming on. We appreciate all the support from the Hive and City of Grand Forks University. It's great. So EyesightDrones.com is ours, I guess.
EyesightDrones.com. I see email for both for EyesightDrones is info@EyesightDrones.com. And you guys are on Facebook as well, EyesightDrones. Just give them a search there. Easy peasy. I guess for the Hive, HiveGF.com. And to email them, info@HiveGF.com. And they're on Facebook at the Hive GF. So there we go. Well, Trevor Woods, Executive Director of Northern Plains UAS Test Site, thank you so much for coming on and joining us today.
Thank you.
Tommy, always a pleasure. This is, this hour flew by. I'm looking forward to the next. I think John Roberts will be back next month. I had a blast filling in these last couple episodes here. So thank you guys so much for everything today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for watching the third episode of Drones, Code, and People. We will be back in a month. And for more info on EyesightDrones drone services or the Hive, check those links we got scrolling down below or in the description of this website, description of this episode on wherever you're watching or listening to this. And don't forget, coming up here at 2:30 on Grand Forks Best Source, we have a new episode of Mixed Culture starting up at 2:30. So until next month, have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you on the next episode of Drones, Code, and People.